Good morning and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, August 19th in the year 2000. We are pleased to have as our presenters in the fireside room today is Bob and Gracie Ekblen and company, who will continue and finalize their series on life in El Norte, perspectives from South and North. Today's presentation is numbered EKB 2000-5. Let's listen in.
Final session, and we're going to be talking about life in El Norte, life in the North, and about the ministry of Tierra Nueva del Norte, which is an ecumenical ministry that we're all members of in Skagit County to migrant farm workers who are mostly from Mexico. We have Jorge Calis and Jorge Mejia and Hector Giron and Miguel Castro, who are Hondurans, who've been working as chaplains for the last 2 months in two of the 11 migrant labor camps in Skagit County. And then we have Rocio Robles here, who is a commissioned lay pastor, working with our ministry, who's been working with us for the last 6 years since we started. So we will all be sharing with you perspectives on this ministry. I'd like to start out with just a few slides. This is a picture of Mount Baker, which is in the Skagit Valley there, which is the destination for thousands and thousands of both migrant farm workers, and then it is the place where many people have settled as well, settled permanently. We talked last night in another session about push factors that are pushing immigrants to leave their countries. The main push factors for these immigrants would be lack of land, lack of jobs, poverty, and those are probably the main reasons for Mexican people to leave their lands and to come north. Just a depressed economy in Mexico has led to a massive exodus of people to the north. And then the pull factors we also talked about last night. The major pull factors would be the U.S. dollar. You know, the minimum wage, although that seems it's very minimal for people living and working in this economy, from a Mexican or Central American perspective, it's a lot of money. And so jobs and the possibility of making minimum wage and more oftentimes is a major pull factor, as is the possibility for kids to be educated, to receive an education, to learn English, and probably reunification of family would be another major pull factor. Now, there's many, many people that, their families are separated, and so there's family members in Mexico or in Central America that want to join their family up here, so that's another big reason to come north. So anyway, in our particular area, the jobs that are available are cucumbers and strawberry. The work begins in May or March or April with the harvest of the flowers. We have the Tulip Festival in our county, and of course the Tulip Festival rarely features the migrant farm workers, but they're the ones that do all the harvesting of the flowers and all the planting of the bulbs and everything. And then in June we begin with a strawberry harvest, which is a grueling 2 week period of harvesting. There's 2 weeks of harvesting of the strawberries, 2 to 3 weeks, and that's followed immediately by the blueberry harvest, and then raspberry harvest. All the raspberries are increasingly machine harvested. This is this is followed by the cucumber harvest in the month of August and into September, which is happening right now. Then there's the potatoes, which they're all machine harvested, but there's the sorting of the potatoes and washing and cleaning in big warehouses. And then also the cauliflower and broccoli, which is happening all the way until October. And then once you get to the end of October, there's very few jobs. But during all this period, there's fish processing plants and artificial crab processing plants and chicken, other meat processing plants that are working all the time, which are job places that usually attract folks that have decided to settle permanently in the region. In our area, we used to have almost all migrant farm workers coming in, and we'd have 10,000, 15,000 migrant farm workers coming in, and they just come in from May until the end of September. Now we have increasing numbers of people that have settled permanently in the region, and about half of those people are undocumented, and probably over half of the migrant farm workers are undocumented, means they have no legal status in the United States. So anyway, one of our difficulties with our ministry is how do you reach out to migrant farm workers who are here mainly to work? What we've discovered is one way to do it is to get out into the fields. And in the initial beginning parts of our ministry, we did some of this. We got out and you can see how long ago it was. My kids were pretty small. We'd go out and hang out with the people in the fields, which was pretty awkward at times. But that led to building relationships and getting to know people closer, in a closer way, to the point where, you know, we began visiting people in their homes and establishing relationships. There are tremendous barriers in terms of, for our ministry. Our ministry is ecumenical, but because it is not officially a Roman Catholic ministry, there's a lot of distrust. Most of the migrant people, most of the immigrants in our area are Roman Catholic. And there are so many evangelical groups, you know, Mormons and Pentecostals and Baptists, and that most migrants don't really know how to distinguish the difference. For them, a Mormon and a Lutheran, there's no difference. They're two non-Catholic sects. Okay, so we're trying to come in and communicate represent a united ministry of Protestant churches to kind of help people see that the churches, you know, there are many churches that share a common faith and share much of the faith of the Catholic Church. And we're not there, we emphasize that we're not there to change their religion, we're not there to make them Protestants, we're there to serve them in Christ's name and to help them learn the scriptures. But all of that, in order for us to even get to the point of reading the Bible with people, we have to win their trust, and that happens through building relationships. Another way that we build relationships with people is through the jail ministry. We visit inmates twice a week doing Spanish Bible studies, and that's probably the place where our Bible studies, where we're really able to do ministry of the Word and Sacrament freely and immediately almost. There's probably 20% of the 180 member jail, or 180 inmate jail, are Hispanic, and almost all those people come to our Bible studies, which are every Thursday night and every Sunday afternoon. And once we're in the jail, we meet all kinds of people in major crisis. You know, maybe they're looking at major time in prison. Some of them are looking at just being a short time, but then deportation. And a lot of them have families. Sometimes they have wives who are about ready to give birth. In this case, this woman's husband was sentenced to 14 years in prison, and she was 6 months pregnant when he was sentenced. So we accompanied her through her labor and delivery and supported her with clothing and helped her get into an apartment and furnished the apartment with help from churches. And, you know, just visited to make sure she was okay. So our jail ministry provides an opportunity to reach out, to meet all kinds of people. Many inmates say, please visit my wife and my children. And then we developed a family support center, which is open 5 days a week, or 6 days a week, or, you know, from 9 to 5. And it's a place where we have a big clothing distribution, free clothing, and then we have people, volunteers, and some staff that are there all the time to help people that come in with different needs that they have. The jail is, as I was mentioning, is a place of probably the greatest place that has become the place of where we really are able to establish people, trust with people. Recently, I had a group of 15 inmates, and they had no experience with Bible study or no real experience in the church. All of them have been baptized, but they'd never been through First Communion, or none of them have been through catechism or anything. And we, after a couple of weeks of leading Bible studies with this particular group, one of them said, well, tell us about baptism. You know, some of us are wondering whether we have to be rebaptized. And because evangelicals tell us that, what do you think? And because, you know, and I said, well, what do you guys think? How do you feel about your baptism? And they said, well, we don't remember it. We don't know anything about it. We don't know what it means. So it's probably not valid, is it? And I said, well. And so that led us into a big discussion about the meaning of baptism. And then that was followed by questions about the saints. What do you think about praying to the saints? And about the importance of the saints. So we did some Bible studies on the saints. And then, anyway, the baptism question kept coming back. And so I asked them, I said, well, would you guys be interested in going through a reconfirmation of baptism? Into having a service of reconfirmation of baptism, which would be preceded by a whole course on the meaning of the Christian faith and the meaning of baptism, like a catechism course. And then we would at the service, we would, for the reconfirmation of baptism, we'd have communion. We have a first communion for some of you. And all of them said, yes, that's great. So I came with the baptismal vows the next week, and we spent a couple weeks, probably three, four weeks, going through all the baptismal vows, doing Bible studies on each of the different commitments that you make. And then after we were done doing that, I said, well, how do you feel? Are you ready to make this sort of a commitment? And everyone said, yes. So I said, okay, this Sunday we're going to do it. So a couple, I think it was last Sunday, actually, we did it, or the Sunday before. We had this special service, and we had two of the Honduran guys with us, and we asked, had the people, we read all the vows over again, and said, are you sure you want to do this? They all said yes. So we had this service, and everyone made their baptismal vows, a recommitment to Christ, and then we had this communion service, and it was just beautiful experience. So the jail is a place where we can do that, whereas once people are out on the streets, or if they're out on the streets, there's so many people caught up in the life of drinking and drugging, and are just working, working around the clock, these 12-hour days, 7-day a week, 6 days a week jobs. Once people get out of jail, too, we have a lot of people that want to stop. Some of them have been drug dealers. This guy was a crack dealer, and I had a Bible study in his house, in a crack house, for a couple months, which was quite interesting. He insisted, even though people were coming to the door and I would stop to buy drugs, that we do the Bible study. It turned out I knew about 90% of the guys that came to buy drugs. So some of them would come, and they'd be so fried on crack, and they wouldn't want, they'd hang out for a little bit and listen to the Bible study, participate a little bit, and then they'd disappear. But people were coming and going in this crack house. It's just amazing. Anyway, this guy was able to pretty much, little by little, stop using crack. But he had so many issues. Like the minute he got out of jail, he got a job, and all of his wages were, 50% of his wages were garnished because he had to pay back child support for his own kids who he was living with right then at the time. But since he was in jail and his wife was collecting welfare, they garnished 50% of his wages to pay the welfare that he'd received. So he was so frustrated, he came to me and said, I'm going to start selling drugs again. I can't do this. So that's when we stepped in and we called the Department of DSHS and the Department of, the people that collect the child support, and we negotiated with them to take 5% of his salary instead of 50%. Okay, and that's one of the things, one of the major parts of our ministry is advocacy, is standing with people to help negotiate with the courts. We go to courts with people every day of the week, people on our staff, our volunteers, and also help get people in drug and alcohol treatment, and do marriage counseling. I do lots of counseling of couples that are in conflict, that are in serious conflict, like, maybe there's been a lot of domestic violence. But they want to improve. They want to stop beating on each other. So some of them come and they want counseling. And I've done a lot of that through our family support center. Another issue that we run into is the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol is in the beginning of our ministry was constantly rounding up people. They'd go and with groups of 25 to 40 agents and guard dogs, police dogs, helicopters, and they'd surround places of employment. And they would go in and they'd raid. They'd do these raids where they would just. No one knew it was coming. They just surround all the doors and just have a fish processing plant, and they come in and they just grab people and corral them all into a little office, and there would be a lot of people running, and they'd have helicopters that would follow the people that were running and radio the people, and there other people in jeeps, and other agents would be chasing them down through the fields and tackling them. And anyways, often a very just a lot of violence and abuse happened in these raids. So we organized the Skagit Whatcom INS Watch Group, where we train people in the use of video cameras and in basic civil rights and in nonviolent action. And we organized a response network where we could send groups of people with video cameras to monitor raids. So, we publicized this everywhere. We invited the Border Patrol down, all the Border Patrol agents and the INS from Seattle, to a special meeting with all the farmers and all of our whole group of farm workers. And we said, okay, we're going to do this, and we just want you to know we're not trying to stop you from doing your job. We just want to, we want to see more respectful treatment of the farm workers. So we're going to be videoing this. And we had a lawyer there with us who assured everybody that this was legal for us to do this. And the Border Patrol agreed. And anyway, so what happened is when the raids happened, we would send these teams. And a lot of times we weren't able to get there in time because it happened so fast. But afterwards, we would interview all of the people that experienced abuse. And then we have a little bilingual newspaper. that we publish quarterly called Tierra Nueva, New Earth News. And we publish all the abuses. And then what we do is we also make a news briefing, press release, and we would fax it to all the major newspapers right after the raid. And so all these raids began to be get coverage in the local media and also national media. So the Border Patrol was just really on the hot seat. And anyway, we organized more and more meetings where we invited congressional representatives and all kinds of people. And finally, the Border Patrol, they came to me kind of secretly. I mean, they came with me unofficially and they said, listen, we've decided to cooperate with you. I want to tell you unofficially we're not going to do any more raids. So that was an incredible, incredibly exciting sort of process. But still, the Border Patrol is at work. And instead of doing raids, what they do is they show up at the jails. And they seem to be working closely with the police. You know, where police officers who suspect someone is undocumented, they'll just stop someone. Like, this is a person I was driving along with my kids. And Isaac and Lukey, we were going to swimming lessons, and I saw a Border Patrol agent just pull over a guy who was walking. And so I stopped and took pictures, and this was on the front page of our next newspaper, you know, walking while Mexican or whatever. And we showed how people were just being stopped just because of the color of their skin, right? And that has stopped as well in our county. But what does happen now is the police will stop people, and it seems like the charges are false charges, trumped up charges. What they do is they call. I've had a police officer tell me this. They'll call the Border Patrol and said, I got Jose, you know, Santiago or something here. What do you want me to do with him? And the Border Patrol will say, take him down to the jail and just book him for 72 hours. You know, they have 72 hours before they file charges, right? And then we'll check up on him. So they bring in all kinds of people like that, and then the Border Patrol comes and puts holds on people. And so almost everyone out of our Spanish Bible study gets deported, you know, after they've done their time. And their time, some of them go to prison, of course, for drug or, you know, whatever charges they have. But others, no matter how many days they're in there, if they're undocumented, they're immediately deported down to Mexico. This is one of the areas that was raided several times, the big, huge pumpkin barn. Oops. I think my kids got into my slides here. Ay, ay, ay. Excuse me. Ah, there was the Border Patrol. Okay, this is a funny picture. This is an interesting story. We have actually a pretty good relationship with the Border Patrol. We've tried to always show respect to them. Once we started getting real, you know, national attention, well, I mean, like the television, we had television reporters coming and doing things, then they started publishing things. But they wouldn't before that. Anyway, this is a situation where we've had numbers of families who had family members who were put into deportation proceedings right at the end of the harvest, so when they were already planning on going back to Mexico. In this case, the younger woman there said, well, I can drive our family down to Mexico. I've never driven before, but I'm sure I can figure it out. And I said, well, you know, maybe we could figure out another way. And I got thinking and I thought, I wonder if the Border Patrol would send them down together on a plane. Because if it's women, they always put them on planes. If it's men, they always handcuff them to the rails of buses and drive them down. So I asked them, I said, well, how would you feel if I could arrange for you to have a flight down with your husband with the Border Patrol? And they said, well, if they wouldn't take our fingerprints and our photos and put us into their system, we would do that. So I called the Border Patrol and I said, look, I got a whole family that needs a ride, needs to go down with their husband. They have no other way to get to Mexico. They're all undocumented. What do you think? Would you take these people and deport them with a husband without fingerprinting them? And they thought about it and they called me and they said, yes, that's fine, we'll do that. So we've had several cases where I've been able to do that and get them to cooperate and help us, actually. Another thing that we do is we engage churches. We have about 26 churches this summer working with us, including Lake Chelan Lutheran. They sent a group of young people down. We have a lot of different projects they can be involved in. Sometimes it's building basketball courts in the migrant camps. Other times it's migrant Bible schools. This year we did 10 different migrant Bible schools, which last a week. And we bring in churches who we train them a bit. We try to train them a bit in cross-cultural communication if they need it especially, and in just how to run a Bible school bilingually. Or just, you know, this it's a different, it's not a migrant vacation, it's not a vacation Bible school because the people are all working, so we emphasize kind of the distinctiveness of this Bible school. Anyway, they come in and they work directly with us. And then this year we had the four Hondurans living in two of the camps to kind of be present. And they were like, there's the worker priest model where they would be working side by side with people in the fields and then living in the camps with them and just being available for to talk about any kind of problems they had. Yeah, I'm going fast. So these are some of the projects that the churches that have been involved in. We work with the growers. We get the growers, try to encourage the farmers to improve the life for the migrant workers by providing all the materials for improvements, and then we do all the labor. And then these are some of the migrant Bible schools we had. These are a mask-making craft project. One of the reasons for these for engaging the churches is to raise awareness among the church people, on the one hand, but on the other hand, to break down the barriers between Hispanic and white. There's a lot of distrust. Most Hispanic folks feel like they're sort of unwelcome. They're welcome in the fields as workers, but they're not really welcomed in the shopping centers, in the malls, and just in the culture. They're viewed with suspicion. So we try to break down the barrier and help the people have positive experiences with each other. We also have a farming project where we have 8 acres that a farmer loans us. And this year we have 15 families working. They each have like a half an acre plot where they grow corn and vegetables. And then in the summers, in September, October, we organize. Last year we had 13 churches every week that would host a family who would come with all their produce. We'd set up produce stands, and then the farm workers would be presented in the church service. And then at the end, people could buy corn and different produce. And our objective was to help break down the barriers once again between the farm workers and the people and growers, producers and consumers. And then this is a way for us to promote our ministry and get support. You see, all of our support, we're dependent completely on the churches and on individuals for our support. We have our budget's gone from $60,000 a year to $140,000 now, because we need to hire. We plan on hiring Rocio full-time probably by the end of the year. And so we'll have 3 full-time employees. Gracie and I share a position, so we're one position. And then we have another man who's an advocate, lay pastor. And then now we want Rocio. We need more people after, even than that. This is selling in the churches, in a Presbyterian church in Oak Harbor. Vacation Bible School. A lot of times the vacation Bible schools will end with a big fiesta where the church will sponsor a huge fiesta. And at times we've invited, the church has had invited the whole migrant camp to the church. And we'll have a presentation at the end where we'll invite all the farm workers to stand and the whole congregation will formally thank them with a round of applause for coming and doing such hard work. Really formally recognizing their work. And I've seen people with tears streaming down their faces, because they so often feel like they're not appreciated. When they're rounded up by the police so often or by the Border Patrol, it's a real mixed message. This is the Lutheran Church, Edison Lutheran Church Fiesta. That's the end of the slide. So now I've asked the Hondurans and Rocio to speak about their perspectives.
We're going to have 3 minutes. No, ellos.
¿Quiere hablar?
Sí. Nosotros hemos venido acá a conocer la realidad, ¿no?
We've come here to learn about the reality.
Pero todavía no la conocemos.
But we still don't know it.
Porque no estamos viviendo lo que están viviendo los inmigrantes.
Because we're not living what the immigrants themselves are living.
Porque nosotros Estamos diferentes. Tenemos un apoyo.
We have help here. We're
con
supported.
Permiso.
We're here with permission, legal permission.
Y el apoyo del Ministerio de Tierra Nueva.
And we have the support of Tierra Nueva.
Entonces, no sufrimos.
So we don't suffer.
No sufrimos lo que están sufriendo los mexicanos.
We don't suffer what the
porque
Mexicans
solo mexicanos
suffer.
Hay en los campamentos.
Because there's only Mexicans in the camps.
Yo y Héctor.
Me, myself and Hector.
Vivimos en un campamento.
We live
dos.
In a migrant camp number two.
Comenzamos a entrarle.
We began.
Con los vivientes allí.
Living with the people there.
No pudimos con la palabra de Dios.
We couldn't speak about the word of God.
No nos identificamos primero. Ellos son católicos.
Because they're all Catholics.
Ellos les parece que uno va a evangelizarlos.
And they think we're trying to evangelize them.
Y ellos rehuyen a.
And they run from that.
Y buscamos otros medios.
So we look for other means.
Quizás haciendo amistad.
First making friends, friendships.
Platicando del trabajo.
Talking to the people about work.
Platicando de lo que es el Ministerio de Tierra Nueva.
Working or talking with them about what the Ministry of Tierra Nueva del Norte is and who we
que
are.
Somos católicos igual a
we are Catholics just like them.
Algunos, ¿verdad?
Some of
algunos
us.
De nosotros.
Some of us.
Entonces, fueron haciendo un poco de confianza.
So little by little we are winning people's
pero
trust.
Pero siempre ellos no confían.
But still they
son
don't
desconfiados.
Trust. They're very distrustful.
They huyen a la plática.
They run from conversations.
Entonces se aíslan, ¿va?
And they isolate themselves.
Pero sí hemos logrado identificarnos.
We've been able to identify
que somos personas que podemos ayudar.
We've been able to identify certain people who are able to help and who are able to serve.
Ya de último,
finally,
ya nos solicitan apoyo, ayuda, consejos,
advice from us.
Y nosotros estamos atentos
we're attentive
a ayudarles.
To help them.
Cómo entender la Biblia,
how to understand the Bible,
cualquier otra información
whatever
si está enfermo,
if they're sick,
pues si es un dolor pues tenemos pastillas,
they have pain, well, we have pills,
si es de ir al médico pues,
they need to go to a doctor,
él nos orienta,
so we,
qué
Bob
puede
tells
hacer,
us what to do, what we're able
entonces
to do.
Ya más o menos tenemos una relación,
so there we have a relationship,
sí, pero sí ellos siempre en cuanto a la Biblia, ellos tienen problemas porque ellos tienen su dialecto.
Because they have their own language.
El español,
Spanish,
no está perfecto.
They're not perfect in Spanish.
No entienden lo que significan las palabras
they don't understand
en la Biblia en español.
The words in Spanish
tenemos nosotros que apoyarles
we have to help them
un poco cuando
little.
Ellos nos dan campo de
and they give us a chance
hacerlo,
to
¿no?
talk to do that.
Sí, ese es nuestro trabajo.
And that's our work.
Sí, algo parecido. Lo de ellos nada más que por gracia
our work
a Dios,
is similar to theirs. They're in another minor camp.
En el campo que nosotros trabajamos
in,
acá por la oficina.
In the camp where we are, which is by the office of the grower.
Yo les decía, pues aquí empezamos con la plática, un poquito de confianza.
Winning people's trust.
Y doy gracias a Dios porque Él me utiliza en el don del evangelismo.
God uses me and I think
y de una forma o de otra podía llevar la palabra de Dios. Y también estuvimos repartiendo algunas cobijas.
So we were
y requisito para una cobija tenía que hablar un rato de Dios. Son bromas. Lo pasaba adelante.
A blanket was they had to hear, listen to us talk about God a little bit. That's a joke.
Lo pasaba adelante, les daba confianza y ahí so lo nomás we, llevaba el mensaje, la palabra de Dios. Y una cosa que me dio muy buen resultado
we
es que visitábamos hogar por hogar
camps, camp, house
y
by house,
a Dios gracias pues alguna gente nos rechazaba
some
pero
people rejected us.
Hay que reconocer que decía a Jesucristo que era perfecto
to remember that Jesus
le dieron
Christ was perfect.
Y no digamos a nosotros
too,
pero eso
us,
en ningún momento nos hizo sentirnos
that
mal sino que más bien nos impulsaba a seguir predicando la palabra de Dios
God.
Y pudimos ver que mucha gente llegaba, ha llegado tarde la noche a buscar consejos desde el Oriente. Y como les decía en una participación anterior, que ahí hay una gran labor que hacer. Y yo los exhorto en el nombre de Jesús que hay que trabajar ahí. Hay mucho joven necesitado de orientarlo porque ellos están en un dilema que creen que la drogadicción o el
alcohol
van a resolver todos sus problemas. Entonces uno su labor cuando uno debe llegar ahí que debe de confiar en Dios que eche todas sus ansiedades sobre Dios y que Él va a respaldarlos y va a dar respuesta a sus necesidades. Porque hay algo que me apoyó mucho, es Salmo 55, 22, que dice: echad sobre Jehová todas vuestras cargas, y Él nos sustentará y no deja caído al justo para siempre. Hay mucho que hacer ahí, vale la pena, yo los animo, ¿verdad? Que es poco el tiempo que hemos estado, pero hemos podido sentir la mano de Dios guiándonos en todo momento, porque de las personas que viven ahí, 96% son jóvenes, muy poco adulto, y entonces esta gente está, se puede hacer mucho, se puede hacer mucho. Entonces yo creo que vale la pena que se continúe con esta labor.
Quiero ampliar un poco.
Hemos
visto que lo primero que hace la juventud que viene de América Latina,
come from Latin America,
compra un carrito.
They buy a little car.
No compra nada de otra cosa.
They don't buy anything else, they buy a car.
Pero con su equipo de sonido.
But with a big speaker system.
Y lo pone a todo volumen.
And they put it in full volume.
Donde quiera, por la calle y allí.
In the streets, wherever they go, in the camp.
Y el día de pago,
and the day they get
compra
paid,
su caja de cerveza,
they buy their big box of beer,
y lo celebra.
And they celebrate.
Eso ayer se comentó.
Yesterday we
ayer se comentó
that.
Ese caso, pero es un gusto de ellos, ¿verdad?
It's something they enjoy.
Y eso costaría mucho cambiarlos.
But this would be very hard to change.
Sería una tarea muy difícil.
This is a very difficult task.
Pero nosotros, como persona, no estoy
role,
de acuerdo.
I'm not in agreement.
Muchacho.
No está de acuerdo aquí.
De ese sistema.
He's not in agreement with that. I'm not personally in agreement with this system.
Es cierto que aquí el carro es útil.
It's true that a car is useful.
Pero se entiende, va, que
useful. Yeah.
Es útil. Se entiende que para su utilidad.
But we have to know what
it's
useful for.
Pero ya el caso, el uso que se da en algunas personas.
The use that some people give to a car.
Yo no estoy de acuerdo.
I'm not in agreement.
Pero sí, son cosas que otra cosa que hay, otro problema, es
another
una barrera para ellos, para ellos aquí.
Is,
es que en este lugar,
place,
en Burlington, son montones de latinos.
There's many, many Latin people.
Ya la compañía Sakuma,
Sakuma company,
ellos mismos renegan entre sí, porque el horario es muy poco.
The people complain about
corte,
the work because
pizca,
the amount of time is
pagan
short.
Por libra.
Because they pay people by the
entonces,
pound.
El número de trabajadores
so
es demasiado.
There's too many workers.
Entonces no dura ni 6 horas.
So they can only
en
can work 6 hours a day.
6 horas lo más.
Because there's too many. There's not enough work to go around.
Qué lástima.
And
está
the people
mal,
say, it's bad. This is
mucha
bad.
Gente.
It's too bad. This isn't. It's not good. The harvest.
Entonces la compañía, por la menos cosa, está retirando.
So the company,
la
for,
menos
for
falta,
whatever reason possible, small
está retirando a los trabajadores.
They're firing workers.
Porque mal trabajo.
Because maybe they're not doing the job well.
Porque no fue una práctica
because
de un trabajo.
Because they didn't go to a practice to learn how
porque
to do
hay que hacer práctica
job.
Un día o dos.
Because maybe one or two days you have to go out and practice and learn how to do a job.
Porque falló en la hora.
Because they didn't come on the right time.
Muchos requisitos demasiado
estrictos. Many, many strict requirements.
Ellos van a nosotros.
And then they go to us.
A preguntar.
And the people ask us.
Gracias a Dios,
Sakuma
tiene dos empleados mexicanos.
Sakuma has two Mexican employees.
Que ellos, pues, son buena gente.
And they're very good people.
Entonces, los enviamos a ellos.
So we send others to
para
those
que
people.
Ellos anden el caso.
So they can work out the cases.
Pero si el caso es algo serio,
but if
o,
the case is serious,
pues, ellos se van.
Then the people just leave and they have to go. Sí. Leave the case.
Es una lástima.
This is a sad thing. It's a pity. Sí.
El objetivo real de Tierra Nueva es predicar la palabra de Dios. Nosotros tenemos pues muchas dificultades para hacer
esto. We have a lot of difficulties to be able to do this.
La gente trabaja muchas horas,
the people
todos
work
los días
many hours
esta
every day, especially at this time of year.
La mayor parte de la gente que está en esta época
who are here during this period
regresa
of time,
a México.
They return to Mexico.
Después de tanto tiempo, pues, el primer año tal vez, solo éramos pues
in the beginning of our time, after a lot of work, there were only 4 people in our Bible study.
Tenemos un estudio bíblico desde pues, hace casi 6 años.
We have a Bible study that's been going 6 years now.
Cada domingo.
Every Sunday.
y últimamente cómo se ha llenado el estudio.
And recently, it's incredible how many people are coming to the Bible study. Lots and lots of people.
Ha costado mucho trabajo.
It's taken lots and lots of work to get to that point.
También tenemos un oficio a mediodía todos los días.
Also, we have a daily service every single day of the week, a prayer service at noon.
Para orar y
to pray,
leer las,
and to read
las lecturas del día,
the daily reading of the
scriptures
and the Beatitudes.
Mucha gente llega,
many people
llega
come,
por ropa,
they come to get clothing, they come for, because of some problem, we invite them, and the majority stay for that service.
Los obstáculos más grandes
es esto,
¿verdad?
The greatest obstacles.
La gente trabaja demasiadas horas, no tiene tiempo para ir. O bien esa desconfianza que
or maybe the lack
parte
of trust that a lot of people have, the majority have.
Como acaban de decir mis
like,
compañeros,
my friends here were saying,
la gente es sumamente desconfiada.
People are very distrustful.
Muy desconfiada
very
en cuanto a, se trate a,
when it comes to
a la buena nueva.
The good news.
Por ejemplo, hay muchos evangélicos
example,
que son sumamente agresivos
very
y quieren cambiar a la
they
gente.
To change the people.
O sea, tratan de evangelizar,
they
pero de que dejen lo suyo.
But they come,
los de que dejen su religión.
Oh, but they really emphasize that people have to leave their beliefs and religion completely.
Entonces, por ejemplo, los testigos de Jehová.
For example, the Jehovah's Witnesses.
O los mormones.
Or the Mormons.
Entonces, la gente a eso le huye.
The people run from that. They flee from it.
Una de las cosas que tiene Tierra Nueva
one
es eso.
Tierra Nueva has,
uno acepta a la gente
sin
cambiar.
Without trying to change them.
La mayor parte de los que van
the majority
son
people
católicos.
Who come are Catholic
son católicos. Entonces, están contentos de
and
que no estamos tratando
we're
de,
not trying
de cambiarles
to change them,
sus
change
ideas,
ideas.
Su religión.
Their religion.
Aunque sí tratamos de querer cambiar esa imagen tan dura que tienen de Dios.
We are trying to really change their image of God, which is so dark, so bad.
Grandes problemas que tenemos.
This is one of the big problems.
La imagen
the images that people have of God.
Que todos los, la mayor parte de
the majority of the Mexicans have an image, negative image of God, that we bring from Mexico.
Para nosotros. Que nosotros que llegamos de México,
for us, people that have come from Mexico,
católicos,
Catholic,
pero no tanto por, no es por echarle la culpa a la iglesia católica, más bien es como una tradición.
It's a tradition.
Nosotros lo traemos por generaciones.
From generation to generation.
Nosotros le enseñamos a los niños
we teach children
esa imagen dura de Dios.
That is very harsh.
Pórtate bien o Dios te va a castigar.
Behave yourself,
no hagas
God
esto, si no Dios te va a castigar.
If you don't obey, God will punish
y crecemos con esa idea.
So we grow up with this idea.
Crecemos con esa idea.
Grow up with this image.
Que es tan difícil cambiar.
That it's so hard for us to change.
Yo tenía esa idea.
I had this image
a mí me costó mucho trabajo.
Me work
a veces se me sale
still,
decir, Dios te va a castigar.
My kids sometimes, even God's going to
pero
punish
este, es que trae uno ya, eso está
it's
completamente
so
pegado.
Deeply rooted in
yo comencé a cambiar esa imagen yendo a los estudios bíblicos
going
de,
to the Bible
de los pastores.
The pastors.
Ellos me han ayudado a realmente entender lo que es la palabra de Dios.
What was the word, what the word
la gracia.
The grace,
la gracia de Dios.
Grace of God.
Eso para mí fue tan
this
nuevo.
Was so new for me.
Nuevo. Fue como un descubrimiento.
It was like a discovery.
Entonces, la verdad es que a mí me gustaría que,
so
que la gente se diera
really
cuenta
to aware
de la gracia
of the grace
de
of God
and the mercy que of God, realmente existe.
Which really exists. Yes.
Pero uno de los grandes ministerios que está haciendo Tierra Nueva del Norte es la visitación a las cárceles.
Visiting people in the jails.
Ahí uno sinceramente se conmueve de mirar aquella multitud de personas. Quieras o no, como están presos, pues tienen que escuchar la palabra de Dios, ¿verdad? Pero después del estudio y se les pide qué piensan ellos después del estudio que se ha tenido. Y entonces es ahí cuando uno se conmueve y mira que Dios puede libertarlos
liberated.
Y nos hace recordar al apóstol Pablo, preso en una cárcel, pero libertad a su palabra, la palabra de Dios. Y podemos ver ahí que hay cuando uno ora, puede sentir la presencia del Espíritu Santo, porque personas que desean, se arrepienten, decir, es cierto que estoy en esta cárcel, pero no vuelvo a caer muy fácil, y cuando salga de aquí, voy a buscar un nuevo sistema de vida, y el nuevo sistema de vida es Jesucristo. Uno no, como evangélico les voy a hablar, no pretende cambiar las personas. Uno no lo cambia, quien lo cambia es Jesucristo, por con el poder, porque dice él, de modo que si alguno está en Cristo, nueva criatura es, las cosas viejas pasaron, y aquí todas son hechas nuevas. Ningún evangélico ha cambiado a otra persona, quien cambia es Jesucristo.
Jesus changes people. Any questions?
Is the Catholic Church in the United States any different in its approach to a concept of God than the Mexican Catholic?
Es que la Iglesia Católica en los Estados Unidos es diferente en su manera de promover la imagen de Dios que en México.
Sí, como les digo, no es cosa de echarle la culpa a la Iglesia
Católica.
It's not
something we should blame on the Catholic Church.
Yo conocí cuando estaba en la universidad conocí a varios seminaristas.
When I was in the university, I knew some seminary students.
Padres jóvenes, jóvenes no pensaban así, no pensaban así. Y llegué aquí a Estados Unidos y el pastor dio estudios bíblicos en la iglesia católica de Burlington, porque el padre que estaba ahí era abierto, era completamente abierto, entonces es diferente. No se puede decir que sea la Iglesia Católica, más bien es esa tradición que uno trae por generaciones.
From generations. Although I want to add something, Rocío, quiero que usted esté bien. I've seen that there's a hardening in some of the attitudes of some of the new priests in our region. Mm-hmm. They are making requirements. They won't let anyone baptize their children if they're not married. Okay. Well, a lot of couples are in common law marriage. So they can't baptize their children, so they're required to go through all these rules. They don't let people commune if they're not married, you know, in our region. There's teaching going on right now. Suverio está obligado a decir eso. One of the teaching is out now. It's out that we're not going to just give people the body and blood of Christ unless they're able to comply with the rules. So although they're not overtly promoting a negative image of God, By the church discipline, they are covertly or whatever indirectly communicating that God's grace is completely dependent upon whether you're able to submit to the system.
And does the Catholic Church have ministry going on among these folks?
They do have ministry going on, yeah. And it's increased as our ministry's really become much more visible. They've been doing a lot more. But rather than cooperating directly with us and wanting to work with us, it's like they've seemed to be trying to do more because it's like there's a rivalry, and that's really sad to me. ¿Verdad que hay más rivalidad y no es?
Sí. Desde que cambió.
Last year we didn't see them going out to the migrant camps as much, and this year we would go out and they'd be doing a lot of the same stuff, you know, games with the kids and all kinds of stuff that we were doing. So it's just interesting to see that. And then sometimes we'd arrive at the same time. We'd have a plan, you know, to do a class like this, and they'd have a fiesta planned with a piñata for the kids. And so, you know, I mean, it would have been great if we could have coordinated it all, but unfortunately, you know, they're on one side and you're, you know, on the other side. So.
And they won't coordinate with us. They just make their plan, and then they don't tell us what it is, and they just do it. And if we're already doing something, they just do their thing anyway.
You need a mole in their camp.
But actually, you know, we have to take the initiative in coordinating because they have the majority of the people, so they have the power and they wield the power. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they'll go in and if they have a mass, you know, people will go to it, right?
Yeah.
Because people are Catholic, right? But if we want to work, even though we've been doing it before, they were doing it. In terms of some of this migrant Bible school and everything, we have to go to them and say, okay, what's your schedule? And then we have to work around them. That's the only way cooperation will happen, mm-hmm. Which is okay.
But they will share their schedule with you.
They will share their schedule with us.
Do they operate out of the Catholic Church in Burlington?
Yes, they do. And they're doing some really good work now, better and better all the time, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that they're really making efforts, you know. But you know, if some of it's from rivalry, that's okay. If the people are benefiting, that's great.
What's the name of the priest in Burlington?
Now there's a Colombian priest, but it's the main guy in charge of the whole Catholic Church in the region, who's more of a kind of a hardline guy. So even though some of the priests are more open, maybe, but the general kind of politic of, you know, the.
You're taking Burlington, Washington, aren't you?
Yeah, Burlington, Washington. Mount Vernon is the center.
Mount Vernon, because the
guy. You know, say,
I work with the Archdiocese.
Correct. Yeah, you
I
do.
I work with the Archdiocese indirectly, so.
Oh, well.
I know that this new, like, Archbishop that has come in.
I used to be invited to go to do adult worship, adult Bible studies for all the English people, in the English parish, and then also with the Spanish, but now that's no longer going to. It hasn't been. They haven't invited me anymore, and it's not because I've said anything to offend them. It's just because I'm a Protestant. So you know, there's a new Archbishop in Seattle who's very, very hardline. You know, very traditional. I don't know how old he is, but I'm really sad about the destruction that is happening. That new Archbishop, I see a real hardening of attitudes, and I think it's hurting the Catholic Church. Oh, el Archbishop.
This is perhaps irrelevant, but I would be sorry if I left without having asked your thoughts on this. Do you have any thoughts for us as consumers of food surrounding your work? Any insights about, even if we're just looking down to individual households and how we go to the supermarket or whatever? I'm a Midwesterner. There's lots of fruit from West End and a lot of migrant workers in Minnesota, too. But do you have any thoughts about that?
Gracie, do you have any thoughts about that?
That is a really hard question. I think it's hard to be pure in our buying, you know? There's always going to be something that we do that's, you know, going to be impure. And that's a question that I have, too. Because by not buying, then you're not, I mean, then also there's less work, and so then people don't have that work, and then what do they do? And it's complicated.
We buy almost all organic, because we're, you know, agribusiness in America is in a crisis. And in fact, it is all over the world, all over in Europe too, you know, because people can do it cheaper in Mexico and in Southern Hemisphere countries. And because of the globalization now, people are buying, I mean, big supermarkets are buying wherever they can buy it the cheapest, obviously, and that's usually from Mexico. And so a lot of the growers are experiencing tremendous difficulties, financial difficulties. I know in Wenatchee, you know, the apple orchards, they're really hurting because of China, all the apples that are being grown there. But in our area, you know, I mean, like raspberries that were in Yugoslavia, the war in Yugoslavia or in the Balkans really helped the raspberry growers in Washington, the States. But now that there's not a war, you know, a lot of the raspberry growers are suffering. The prices are, you know, the raspberry harvests are better in the Balkans. So, you know, I mean, the globalization is really hurting our local farmers. So I think it's important to buy local as much as possible. And, you know, one way to do that is to ask your local farmers how you can best buy, be a more sensitive buyer. I think that I've talked to a lot of growers in France, and they're finding that the only way they can survive is to go organic and to go for specialized markets, because, see, they can charge more, and you know, when people are buying for ideological reasons and for health reasons when they're buying organic, and I think that's the way of the future.
I just work with Oregon Farmer Greece this summer, and I know if you do search tourists or feel like tourists to buy produce from the U.S., one thing you can do from Oregon, California, you can ask if it's got a union label on it. The union label means it gets it from farms that have contracts with workers and negotiations. And you can call your
produce. Yeah, we've got produce buyers doing good work in the co-ops where we are, but I still feel like I don't understand much about
it. The other thing is it's hard for most people to be able to afford it. I mean, that's a whole other issue, is buying organic. And I try to do that, but it's not easy to be able to afford.
Well, the money and the time to research it and find the right places and then go someplace farther from home than down the street to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Is an effort as well.
Yeah.
But if you can, instead of buying from agribusiness, I really encourage people to not buy from agribusiness, but to buy from the smaller farmers. And you can call the smaller farmers. You can find out who the smaller farmers are by calling the farm, some of the farmers supply. I don't know how you'd call, but there are organizations in every farming area. You can find out who the smaller growers are and where they market their goods. And you can go to those grocery stores.
The produce markets on the highway are good ways to buy local.
Yeah, I think we need to be really deliberate to support our farmers.
Yeah. Another thing they tried in Oregon was to cut out the middle person and to say the farmer can afford to pay more if people will buy it right from the farmer, or they had volunteers delivering the goods, so you didn't have to go to a grocery store. So there might be programs like that.
Is there unionization in, excuse me?
In our area, there is no unionization. We have mainly small growers. And so, unionization is probably more of an issue where you have larger growers. You know, like in Eastern Washington, in Oregon, you have a lot of, there's a need for unionization. But actually, I believe that the ultimate solution, I mean, the best, number one, if you can get the growers themselves to voluntarily improve conditions for workers, I mean, that's the best solution. We've been really successful because many of the growers are really great folks in our area, and are parts of members of the churches on the one hand, but also because we've made a deliberate effort to reach out to the growers and to let them know that we're on their side. And, you know, like our chaplaincy program, all the expenses are paid by the grower to bring these four Hondurans, not to bring them up, but once they're here, all their room and board is covered and they're given a stipend and all kinds of things. And so we have other growers that have said, hey, we need that too. If you can find us other lay pastors. So our big objective right now is to train. We like to train a group of 15, 20 lay pastoral workers who we can have working as chaplains, you know, in the apartment complexes and migrant camps, and then get the growers to subsidize that. And so, we're trying to break through the barriers by win people's trust with the objective of training, you know, local people, to local, like farm worker people, as in the same way that these Hondurans, you know, have been trained and are working as lay pastors. We'd like to have a whole cadre of people helping in this ministry, because it's a very labor-intensive work. And but if we can get the growers, you know, to support it, and the churches, you know, we need the whole community in order for it to happen. One of the things that yesterday we were on the trail hiking up, and we were having this discussion, and Jorge was saying, you know, in order to be able to reach out to people, there's two things that are required. One is humility, and the other is respecting other people's beliefs and persons. And if we do those two things, there's no faster way to get anywhere. We have to begin with there, humility and respect of the person. And I thought, wow, that's just beautiful. You know, that's really what I believe completely too. I guess maybe that's why it's so beautiful, is we agree. But we've seen that people are just not used to being respected. They're used to being treated as people that know nothing, or that are outsiders to the church, or are have no value. Their opinions are of no value. You know, they're and oftentimes the churches, Catholic and Protestant, treat the people in a patriarchal or patronizing way. And you know, to show total respect for people is very disarming. And I think that's the thing that we do in the jail, which is able to, I think, is the most is really even more powerful than the Bible studies or anything. Is showing, you know, we really try to come in. I start my Bible studies and I say, listen, you are all. We need you to. I need your help in this Bible study, because you guys are children of God, and you know, we are all brothers and sisters, and then they'll look at me kind of strange, and I'll say, well, how many of you pray the Lord's Prayer? Since this is a mainly Catholic, you know, people from Catholic backgrounds, they all know the Lord's Prayer. I said, okay, well, when we pray the Lord's Prayer, how does the Lord's Prayer begin? Well, it begins, you know, Our Father. Okay, well, what does that make us if we pray Our Father? All of us pray Our Father. What does that make us? And some of them will say, well, that makes us brothers. I say, okay, so we're equals, right? And what else does it make us? You know, it makes us children of the same parent in heaven, right? And so, okay, so as children, as brothers and sisters here, you know, all of you, I want to welcome all of your participation, because I'm not any better than you. We're all equals. And what you have to say may be the way that God wants to speak. You know, because how does God speak anyway these days, you know? How does God communicate to us? And so some people will say the Bible. Someone will say dreams. And then, and I'll say, okay, well, what do you think it means to be made in the image of God? You know, and what does God look like? Is God a white person? Is God a black person? Is God, what's God like? What language does God speak? You know, and I'll say, well, if we're made in the image of God, then what does God look like? And then someone will say, well, it looks like, you know, this guy over here. And so we'll point to the most kind of ornery looking guy in the Bible study and say, God looks like Miguel, or, you know, Jorge or whatever. And so if you're the image of God, then you might be one of the spokespersons for God. So I want to hear, I'm here waiting to hear God speak through you, you know. And so I do various things like that, introductions to start the Bible study out. And then we read the text, and then, you know, usually instead of me bringing a text, I'll say, I used to bring a text more often, but I always do still bring a text, but I'll say, what are you feeling is like an issue that's really bothering you, or a question that you might have about God or something. And, you know, and then try to begin a Bible study based on where they're at. And as a result of treating people that way, it's amazing. I've seen groups go from just being totally quiet and silent to just becoming animated and participatory. And we have more participation in our Bible study in the jail than I see in most English Bible studies that I do in churches. It's amazing. I mean, it takes a while, but it works. And it's uh-huh.
I'm just wondering a bit more, and you're already starting to talk about Bible studies. I was wondering, what takes place in the lay pastoral Bible studies? Does it involve prayer? Does it involve song? Obviously, it's reflection on the scripture. One of the strengths that I've heard you talk about is that it's both material and spiritual.
Yeah.
And how does it move from prayer to action? And I'm wondering, does that just happen spontaneously? Is there a sense of organizing that comes out of that? Or,
I think usually I try to begin.
Part of that question is that in North America, what is the problem is that we tend to just spiritualize things and we don't think enough about the material.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's important to begin with people's felt needs, you know, what their issues are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I have a text in mind that I want to lead a Bible study on, I think of, you know, say a question that, like, say I want to do the woman at the well, then I might say, well, what are people thirsty for? Like, what is it that you lack right now that you wish you had at this moment in the jail? And they'll say, oh, women. You know, that's always the first thing. People all chuckle. Yeah, we lack women. Okay, you know, beer, marijuana. It's mota, cerveza, mujeres. You know, women, marijuana, beer. Maybe heroin, if there's heroin addicts there. And so I'll say, well, is that something that when you had that you felt satisfied? You know, and they'll say, oh, yeah, well, sometimes we feel really satisfied, yeah. And then someone else will say, well, no, you know, we're never really satisfied, no matter how much we have of all those drugs and of all the women we have, all the women we want, whatever that we're able to have relationship sex with, we're never satisfied. So we end up talking about just why is that that nothing satisfies us, you know? And everyone comes to the agreement that we have this big gap, this hole, this desire. We have this lack. We're lacking, and we desire something to fill us, and we're thirsty, you know. And so then maybe we'll have this discussion first about thirst and about what we use to fill our thirst, right? Or when we're hungry, what do we seek after? And we kind of critique it. And then we'll take the text and we'll say, okay, well, here Jesus comes to the woman. And, you know, what's she doing? Well, she's trying to get the water, she's trying to get something that's going to give her, meet her needs for, you know, to fill her thirst, literally water in this case. You know, okay, so that's all she's doing. It's like one of us who's, you know, we're trying to meet our needs for marijuana, for women or whatever. We're, you know, we're sleeping with some woman, or we're selling drugs, or we're using drugs, we're smoking crack, and, you know, Jesus comes along and says, give me some of, you know, can you give me some of that too? Right? Jesus identifies with us. And, you know, and then Jesus says, hey, if you ask me, I can give you water that you'll never need to drink, you'll never be thirsty again, right? So I contextualize that sometimes and say Jesus comes to the well and says, hey, you know, give me some of that cocaine, you know, I need some good crack, and you know, and they say, hey, why would I sell to you? You might be a narcotics cop, you know. And then they say, well, and then Jesus says, well, if you knew who was asking, who you were talking with, you could ask me for living cocaine. Because the cocaine you need to snort, or you know, you need to smoke, you're gonna have to buy it again, you're gonna have to rob and steal car stereos and break into people's houses and, you know, shoplift and do all this kind of stuff, maybe sell drugs on the side in order to get. But the cocaine I can give you, once you smoke it, you won't ever need to smoke it again. You know? And, you know, or, you know, we try to contextualize it in some way. I mean, sometimes I'll do that for the people if I have to. But other times they're making all the connections, right? Between water and cocaine and, you know, sex and, you know, whatever it is, right? And then in the end we end up talking, okay, well, so what does this mean for us? I mean, what are we going to do about this? I mean, you guys are going to get out of jail and you're going to have all these temptations. And they'll make a plan. They'll say, well, you know, this stuff isn't working for us. And, you know, but when we come here, we feel peace after the Bible study. You know, we feel peace when we're here. We feel nourished. You know, and so a lot of them say, they make a plan. They say, well, when we get out, we're going to try to, you know, to study the scriptures. And we'll come to your Bible study. Or you know, I mean, a lot of times they don't. They come out and they go right back into the crazy life. But I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, another part of it is, you have so many different projects going on. Do those ideas emerge out of the Bible studies? Or does it emerge at business meetings?
The projects?
Yeah, like when you're just so active in so many different areas, does that emerge out of prayer or in scripture reflection?
I would say that they emerge oftentimes from people just coming in to our office and saying, we have these needs. Wouldn't that be true?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not so much what we do, figuring out what they need, is them coming and saying, we have these needs. We have this need for someone to, you know, take us to the health department because our car broke down. We have this need for someone to help us legally. We have no, we can't afford representation. Do you know of any person who can help us legally with this problem? We have somebody in the jail who was, you know, taken by mistake. Can you help us get them out? The people only speak Mistego. They don't even have somebody to speak Spanish or interpret for them. How can we do this? Those are the kind of, I think that's how I feel the needs. How we come in contact with the needs and deal with
Do you have anyone Spanish speaking on the jail staff? Not your
no.
staff?
Nobody.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think our family support center, that we are forced to learn what we need to do to serve the people based on what Grace is saying, the people coming in with needs and issues.
And a lot of times they're not needs that we've been trained in, like the legal ones. Those have been things that we've had to kind of learn as we've been there, as we go along. We've kind of had to, you know, our vocation is sort of evolving depending on the needs of the people.
So now we're not really involved in Border Patrol. The INS watch group's been inactive for a year and a half because we haven't need to respond. So now we've let that go, and we're mainly working in criminal justice, you know, trying to help find pro bono attorneys to help people in jail and dealing with the pro bono immigration attorneys to help people who are in deportation proceedings. So we've become quite developed a real expertise in hooking up people with attorneys and working in the courts.
Some
people can, but then there's also a large group of people that are not Spanish speaking, but they speak their own dialects.
They speak enough Spanish so you can communicate, but Mixteco and Triqui are the language they speak in with their families and with their friends. And
I was going to say, like, one other example would be when the strawberry harvest was in crisis last year because of the rains. And so people who had come from Mexico expecting work to start, you know, on such and such date, actually had to wait for like a month before they could even work. So here they are, the freezing cold, you know, little shacks that don't have heat, and they don't have a job, so they can't make money to buy food, and they're freezing cold, there's no blankets. So then we started with blankets, you know, trying to get churches together just to have blankets available, and maybe go in and give some relief, you know, for people who are really in desperate straits, to try to get, you know, coupons to some of the supermarkets. And actually, some we tried to involve some of the growers with this, and they, you know, some of the growers actually came out and said, you know, here, pass out some of these food coupons to people. And so, you know, trying to build relationships with the growers and the migrant workers. I think we need to stop.
Yeah, we do. We need to stop. It's time for lunch.
But thank you. And if you want to take a look at the newspapers and the pamphlets.